All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Daily Power of Parsha. It's great to have you here. It's great to study Torah together. It's always good to study Torah together. So this week's Torah portion is Korach. And there's an expression that you should be reich v'korach, which means you should be as rich as Korach. Why was he rich? So, I don't know. I guess he had money. But still, notwithstanding all of that, the guy wanted more. And his, as we said yesterday, his eyes got the better of him. His envy, his greed, his jealousy got the better of him. And his end was spectacular, not in a good way, but spectacular in a devastating way. So what we're going to do today, as we let Sandrine into the room. Okay, fine. Sandrine will let you in. If you insist, welcome. Kidding, welcome. Okay, so what I want to do is let's explore the Torah reading, because Korach's demise is quite remarkable. Take a look at the beginning of, okay, this is yesterday's reading. We're kind of like still working a day behind, but don't worry, all is well. Numbers chapter 16, verse number 20. I'm just going to read. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, remember, Korach did not only want to unseat Moses. As we see between the lines, he also wanted to unseat Aaron. He also was gunning for the high priesthood. This guy was all in. All right, so what does God say? Look at this. Disassociate yourselves from this congregation. This congregation means Korach and his folks. And I will consume them in an instant. Look at what happens next. Look at the response of Moses and Aaron. They fell on their faces and they said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, if one man sins, shall you be angry with the whole congregation? The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the congregation, saying, withdraw from the dwelling of Korach, Dathan, and Abiram. Moses arose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. So basically, something's about to go down. They're not supposed to get too close, but of course, Moses goes over there, and he tries to keep people away from these guys because their demise is coming. He spoke to the congregation, saying, please get away from the tents of these wicked men and do not touch anything of theirs, lest you perish because of their sins. So they withdrew from around the dwelling of Korach, Dathan and Abiram, and Dathan and Abiram went out standing upright at the entrance of their tents together with their wives, their children, their infants. You know what it means they went out standing upright? That means they were defiant. They're like, oh yeah, you think we're going to get harmed? Nothing doing. They were defiant in their opposition to Moshe, Aaron, and in this case, to God as well. Moses said, with this you shall know that the Lord sent me to do these deeds, for I did not devise them myself. Take a look. If, and he creates a condition, if these men die as all men die, and the fate of all men will be visited upon them, then the Lord has not sent me. In other words, if they die a natural death, then I'm a fraud. But if the Lord creates a creation, in other words, if something remarkable happens, and the earth, and he calls it right here, this is the called shot, or whatever, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them and all that is theirs, think massive sinkhole, and they descend alive into the grave, you will know that these men have provoked the Lord. As soon as he finished speaking all these words, the earth beneath them split open. Yeah, the earth beneath them opened its mouth and swallowed them in their houses and all the men who were with Korach and all the property. They and all they possessed descended alive into the grave. The earth covered them up and they were lost to the assembly. All Israel who were around them fled from the city, from their cries, for they said, let the earth swallow us up too. A fire came forth from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who had offered up the incense. We skipped that piece of the narrative. Okay, basically, there was this thing where the 250 people with Korach were going to offer up incense pans, and see if God accepted it, as you see here. So the earth swallows up the immediate crew of Korach and his folks, and then a fire came and consumed the 250 people that offered up the incense in an unwarranted fashion. They too perished in this situation. So we need to explore what is this business of the earth opening its mouth, swallowing them alive. What is going on? What is the message here? And what is the message? Why did it happen in such a way? And what is the message for us in 2020? So I want to share a few ideas, a few insights. Number one, it says in Pirkei Avot, it says in Ethics of Our Fathers, that there are two types of disputes, two types of machloket, two types of arguments. There is one that's for that is an argument that is for the sake of heaven, and there's one that's not for the sake of heaven. In other words, there is a type of dispute that's founded on idealistic and holy principles, and then there's one that's founded on none of the above. It's not about a higher cause or a higher purpose. It's just straight up jealousy and fighting. And the Mishnah gives two examples. One example for each type of dispute or machloket. And the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, that what is the example, or what is an example of a dispute that is for the sake of heaven? It is the dispute of Hillel and Shammai, the academies of Hillel and Shammai. Famously, the Mishnah and the Talmud have extensive recordings of debates between these two great sages, a man named Hillel and a man named Shammai, and their respective academies. Each had an academy of Jewish study, and their academies also disagree with each other about areas of Jewish law, all founded upon an exploration for what the Torah would say about such and such case that's not directly discussed in Torah. In other words, in a situation where a case arises in Jewish law that's not directly informed to us by the Torah, so there is a certain measure of derivation and application using precedent, using the laws that we know to apply it to the laws that we don't yet know. Hillel and Shammai both had a role in applying Jewish law to new cases, but oftentimes they applied it in different ways. Based on the same precedents, the same rulings, the same teachings, they applied it to new cases a little bit differently. And there are extensive hundreds of debates between the academies of Hillel and the Academy of Shammai that reflect very different ways of looking at Jewish law. And yet, the Mishnah says, this is an example of a machloket, of a dispute that is for the sake of heaven. Hillel and Shammai and the respective academies were never in it for their own ego. It was never about, well, this is what I think and I want to be right and I want to have my name recorded in the history books and I want everyone to know that I came up with this law. It was never a selfish, it was never an ego-based experience. It was always driven by the single motivation, which is, what does God want us to do? And this person said, it seems to me like God wants us to do this. And this one said, it seems to me that God wants us to do that. But they were both driven by a higher purpose. They were not driven by ego, by selfishness, by jealousy, right? They were driven by simply a pursuit of exploring and exposing God's will. What does God want us to do in this situation? It's not clear. Here's what I think. As true as I can think along the lines of Torah precedent. The Mishnah says any dispute that is founded upon a pursuit of truth and for the sake of heaven, in other words, it's for a higher purpose, that machloket will endure. It will last forever. And you might say, well, what's the value of it lasting forever? Wouldn't it be good to resolve the dispute? What it means is that both parties are remembered forever favorably, even though when it comes to halacha, to Jewish law, we have to choose one approach, either Hillel or Shammai. You should know, we typically choose Hillel. Hillel was usually more lenient in his application of law. Shammai was usually more strict. We go by Hillel. Hillel was the majority. There were more students, more people that aligned with Hillel's way of thinking than with Shammai's. So when it comes to the realm of practical Jewish law, we follow Hillel. By the way, famously, when it comes to the celebration of Hanukkah, right, we light one candle the first night, two the second night, three the third night. We add a candle each night, right? That's the way that everyone does it. That is the opinion of the Academy of Hillel. The Academy of Shammai says, start off with eight, then go 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go down each day. No one does that. You know why? Because the halacha is like the Academy of Hillel. Because we go like Hillel, not like Shammai. But we still study Shammai's opinion. And we still respect Shammai's opinion. You know why? Because they were in it for the right reason. And so even though when it comes to the realm of action, you can only do one way. You can only either light your menorah going up each night or going down each night. You can only do it one way. And we do it like Hillel. So although in the world of action, you have to choose one, which means the other is going to get left out. In the realm of concepts and ideas, in the realm of Torah study, both opinions are forever. Both endure. Both are everlasting. We study to this day the opinions of both Hillel and Shammai. We study it, we explore it, we seek to analyze it, and to apply it in our own way. In fact, the Talmud says, Elu va'elu divrei Elokim chaim. Both these and these are the words of the living God. They're both true. They're both Torah. Although in action, you can only follow one path of action, but in concept, both are true because both applied the principles of Torah faithfully to the best of their understanding. The Mishnah continues. But there's another type of dispute. A dispute, a machlok, that is not l'shem shemaim, not for the sake of heaven. And what's an example of this dispute, of this second type of dispute? The dispute of Korach and his followers. Korach's agenda was not for the sake of heaven. Korach's fight was not about higher truth, was not about fulfilling God's purpose or God's mission. Korach's fight had one purpose and one purpose only, and that was for his own pursuit of power. He wanted to overthrow Moses and Aaron. Why? To assume leadership for himself. And therefore, it is not a machloket l'shem shemaim. It's not a dispute that's for a higher call or a higher cause or a higher calling. It's a low dispute. It's an ego-driven fight. It's fighting because you want to win, you want someone else to lose, whatever. The Mishnah says, when it comes to the first dispute, the dispute is that for a higher purpose, it gives the example of the dispute of Hillel and Shammai. It mentions both parties. But when it talks about the second type of dispute, it talks about the dispute of Korach and his followers. And it doesn't even mention Moses. You know why? Because Moses was never fighting. Because Moses was never part of the fight. He was the subject of he was the target of Korach's fight, but he was never part of that fight. You ever have that experience where someone's fighting with you and you're not even, like, you don't even know why? It's like you're not even involved. They have an issue with you. It's their issue. It's not my issue. I don't have an issue with you. You have an issue with me. I didn't do anything. I have no... Moshe had no issue with Korach. He loved his cousin. He tried to encourage his cousin to back off and to just, you know, embrace his role. He pushed. So what happens? What happens at the end is, as we read today, the earth opens up its mouth, so to speak, and swallows up Korach and his followers. What's the message? Why is such an unusual form of demise? Why? What's the deeper significance? So the earth opening up its mouth and then closing again, yeah, means that the person is swallowed. There's no remnant left. Any other form of death, I mean, like all of the other forms of death, essentially, leave some sort of remnant on planet Earth. I mean, even God forbid, if somebody is burnt alive or whatever, I mean, God forbid, right? There's still ashes that remain. Something, a trace remains. We're talking here about a method of death, Korach's death, in which leaves absolutely zero trace on planet Earth. I mean, I'm thinking the only other way to do this would be to like send someone to the moon or something, or send someone to, you know, outer space. But any other form of death would leave a remnant, but not the Earth opening up and it falling into the bowels of the Earth and the Earth closing back up. What's the message? The message is a similar message to what I mentioned before from the Mishnah, Perkei Avot. It's that when a person, when they're filled with one agenda, and that agenda is ego-driven, selfish, ego, jealousy-driven, the world does not look kindly. History does not look kindly on that person, and that person's so-called legacy is erased, essentially. In other words, when a person has ambition for a higher purpose, so then a person accomplishes, person is able to succeed in whatever, you know, activity we're talking about. All right, so the world remembers them kindly for what they accomplished. But when we talk about a situation where somebody is driven completely by ego, completely by selfish interests, what happens is ultimately that person's legacy is tarnished to the extent that they're not remembered even. I mean, I guess we're remembering Korach on some level because we're talking about him, but it's kind of like an unremembering remembering. It's their whole mission or their whole, I don't know, their whole agenda is lost or undermined in the because of the ego. So let me state this in other terms. When somebody has a healthy motivation or a justified motivation, even if, let's say, they're wrong or whatever it is, but they had good intentions, so you remember them kindly, or at least it leaves some sort of legacy, positive legacy. Even if ultimately it didn't work out, but they had good intentions, leave some sort of legacy. But when somebody's intentions from the beginning are only self-serving, they undermine their own cause, and the cause becomes immoral and unjust because it was driven by ego, completely by ego. So this is a cautionary tale about what drives us. What drives us should be something higher than just self. If we're driven by self, it's not a valid motivation according to Torah. Let's go back inside. I want to do some more verses, some more interesting ideas here. Okay, let's take a look. Chapter 17, verse number 1. So now, in the aftermath of this death and destruction, God again speaks to Moses. And God says, say to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the Kohen, so this was his nephew, that he should pick up the censers from the burned area. Censers were, again, it's like this sort of fire pan thing. Is it like a thing with a wand that you wave? Do we know what it is? All right, it's something. Maybe we can Google it. Let's see what Google shows us. There you go. Look at that. Beautiful. Ta-da! Oh, look at that. It has a power cord. I'm assuming that the ones back then did not have a power cord. You got to be kidding me. That's hilarious. That is funny. Okay, so maybe let's see an more. Oh, look at that one. Oh, well, we've seen that before, right? People carry around those things, incense, little smoke togglers. Yeah, we've seen this before. Yes, yes. All right. This is what they were carrying. The 250 people that got burned. They had incense, the ketores, and they're like, yeah, we're holy. Look, we can also be priests. Yeah, not exactly. So here's what happens next. Say to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the Kohen, that he should pick up the censers. Can't let a good censer go to waste. I mean, pick them up from the burned area, but throw the fire away, because they have become sanctified. The censers of these who sinned the cost of their lives, and they shall make them into flattened out plates as an overlay for the altar. Look at that. Look at that. Unbelievable. They were to melt down the censers and turn it into flattened out plates of metal and overlay the altar. Look at that. The altar was to be covered with the melted metal from these censers. Why? Because, for they brought them before the Lord. They brought these people, the 250 people who died just now, brought them before the Lord, and have therefore they've therefore become sanctified, and they shall be as a reminder for the children of Israel. So whenever a person would bring a sacrifice on the altar, they would see that covering, maybe copper, maybe gold, whatever material it was, they would see that plating on top of the altar. They would remember, oh, this is the remnants from the 250 people who were trying to become Kohanim priests. So they were copper. So Elazar the Kohen took the copper censers, which the fire victims had brought, and they hammered them as an overlay for the altar. Oh, they didn't even melt it down. They hammered it out as a reminder for the children of Israel so that no outsider who is not of the seed of Aaron, in other words, no one who is not a Kohen, shall approach to burn incense before the Lord so as not to be like Korach and his company, as the Lord spoke regarding him through the hand of Moses. So this was a reminder, a warning, for all time, that no one should attempt to become the Kohen. You know the joke about the guy who comes to the rabbi and says, "Rabbi, make me a Kohen." And the rabbi says, "I can't just make you a Kohen." He says, "No, really, make me a Kohen." He says, "I can't." He says, "I'll make a donation." He says, "I can't. I'll make a big donation." "I can't. I'll make a really big donation." The rabbi says, "Okay, fine. Fine. If you're making a really big donation, we'll make it happen." Okay. But tell me, why is it that you're so driven to become a Kohen? He says, "What do you mean, Rabbi? My grandfather was a Kohen. My father was a Kohen. I also want to be a Kohen." The rabbi said, "No problem. Just write the check." Anyway, the joke is because obviously if your grandfather and father is a Kohen, that's how you become a Kohen. The message is, though, that someone who's not, I mean, that's a joke, right? But someone who's not a Kohen, someone who's not born into that priesthood or priestly family, cannot approach the altar to bring the sacrifice. I mean, could not do the service in the temple or bring the incense. And this was the warning. Now, take a look. You'll be stunned. You'll be stunned. Verse number six. The following day, the entire congregation of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord." You see this? You see what's going on here? Korach and the rabble-rousers and the 250 people who try to bring the incense unwarranted, they perish. And now what does the rest of the congregation say to Moses and Aaron? "You killed good people. You got them killed." It came to pass while the congregation were assembled against Moses and Aaron that they turned to the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud had covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and this segues straight into today's reading, which talks about God saying to Moses the following: "Stand aside from this congregation, step back, and I shall consume them in an instant." God is basically saying, this is the final straw. Look what's going on here. There were people that tried to overthrow you and your brother, and I brought about their demise, and now they're complaining about it. That's it. They're all done. What happens next? Moses says to Aaron, "Take the censer." Now you know what a censer is, that little wafty thing, right? Take the censer and put fire from the altar top into it and put incense. Then take it quickly to the congregation, atone for them, for wrath has gone forth from the Lord, and the plague has begun. Aaron took it, the censer, just as Moses had said, and he ran to the midst of the assembly. And behold, the plague had begun among the people. He placed the incense on it and atoned for the people. He stood between the dead and the living, and the plague ceased. The number of the dead in the plague was 14,700, beside those who died because of the matter of Korach. Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the plague was checked. So that's today's reading, a very short reading, but it's not done yet. We still have one more piece of the story tomorrow. But here we have this really dramatic piece. After Korach and his men, his followers, are ended, so the people complain, a plague breaks out, 14,700 die, and Aaron saves the day. Aaron takes the incense. Aaron is allowed to bring the incense because he is the high priest. He brings an incense offering. He waves it amongst the people, and the plague ends. Okay, so what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is, even if you're offended, Even if people are trying to tear you down, still help them out when they need it. You with me on the moral of the story? The people were against Moses and Aaron, and even those who didn't die ganged up against Moses and Aaron, saying, you killed good people. Korach shouldn't have died, and his people, 250 people, shouldn't have died. They ganged up. And you could have thought that Moses and Aaron would say, you know what? Y'all deserve whatever's going to come to you. You're starting up. Even after the earth opens up and swallows them, and even after the fire consumes those that brought the fire pans, even after that, you're still causing trouble. That's it. You're on your own. That's not how they responded. Moses and Aaron went to action. Aaron did his incense thing. The plague stops. And the message is, don't hold a grudge. I know it's easier said than done. Do not hold a grudge. But it's one thing to not hold a grudge. It's another thing to be a blessing for those that try to harm you. Imagine someone, God forbid, is trying to harm you. And instead of taking revenge, not only do you not take revenge, not only do you ignore, but you go out of your way to help them. Now, you might say, karma, karma, baby. Yeah, look at that. You start up with me, God's messing with you. Hey, karma's karma. Sorry, if you didn't want it, you shouldn't have started it. Easy to say that. Justifiable to say that. That's not what Moshe and Aaron do, because they are true leaders and they don't hold grudges. Moshe and Aaron say, doesn't matter. You got yourself into hot water. We're going to get you out of it. Okay, Korach was Korach, and he wasn't able to be gotten out of. He was sunk, all puns intended. But when it came to the other people, when it came to the others, Moshe and Aaron demonstrate the idea that we cannot hold grudges, and we're meant to be there for others, even those that are trying to harm us. That's the Jewish way. All right, it's not just turn the other cheek. It's look out for the welfare even of someone who has an issue with you. Don't have an issue with them and try to help them. And honestly, that's the best form of leadership. If Moses got offended every time someone started up with him, it wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be good. And it's not what Moses is do. If you're a Moses, you don't get offended, right? You're not going to take it to heart. You're just going to feel sorry for the other person, compassionate, and you're going to want to help them. And this is a message for all of us. So let's recap some of the practical lessons we learned today. Number one, we spoke about two ways to argue. Either because you believe in what you're arguing about and it's for a higher purpose, or because you're being selfish and your ego is talking. If it's the former, then you'll be remembered in a positive light. If it's the latter, your legacy will be undone. So Hillel and Shammai disputed all the time. We remember them fondly. Korach, not even Moshe. Moshe wasn't even involved. Korach had an axe to grind. It was ego. We don't remember him kindly. His legacy is undone. That's the message of the earth swallowing up Korach. The legacy, all that you worked for under that ego umbrella, it's all undone. It's all loses the entire legitimacy of the matter. You might have even had a legitimate point on some level. Had you done it the right way, it might have been legitimate. You went about it because of ego and everyone saw it. Forget it. It's done. No legitimacy. The next message is, once again, third day in a row we're going to say this. If you're not a Kohen, don't try to be a Kohen. In other words, respect the boundaries. Don't look to do what someone else is doing. Do what you need to do. Everyone has a mission. Everyone has a calling. Be famous story of Reb Zush of Anipoli, the great Hasidic master, one of the students of the Maggid of Mizrich, who was in turn the student of the Baal Shem Tov. So this is third generation Hasidic movement. Reb Zush said on his deathbed, he was passing away, and his students, his disciples said, were trying to praise him, make him feel good in his last moments on earth, saying, you were as wise as Solomon, as kind as Aaron, as wise as Moses. And he said to his students, when I cross over to the other side, they're not going to ask me, why weren't you like Solomon or like Aaron or like Moses? All they're going to ask me is, Reb Zusha or Zusha, why weren't you the best Reb Zusha you could be? Why weren't you Zusha? And the message for us is, be yourself, everyone else is taken, right? Like Mark Twain once wrote, be yourself, be the best you can be. Don't try to be someone else. That's why they melted down the copper censers and overlaid it on the altar. The message is, Be who you are. Don't try to be someone else. And the final message that we have from today is regarding Aaron saving the day when the plague breaks out, and that is, don't hold a grudge. Somebody might have an issue with you. You don't even have an issue with them. But they're fighting, trying to destroy you. Don't just turn away. Don't just ignore. Don't just not get offended. But on the contrary, feel compassion toward that person. Clearly, they're operating from a sense of pain. That's why they're making so much noise. We once had a speaker here, Label Wolf, the Kabbalist from Australia. Label Wolf once said, when somebody's on the ground screaming, bleeding from their arm, you don't shout back at them. You realize that they're in pain, that they're hurting, and you seek their help, their medical help. He says the same thing is true when somebody is shouting at you from a place of emotion. It means that they're in emotional pain. They're suffering emotionally. So what it means is, don't shout back at them, but feel compassion and try to help them. But feel compassion that they're in a negative state. So the final message here is, be like Aaron, be like Moses. Don't be angry at the person that's angry with you. Feel compassion and try to help them in whatever way that you can. In the case of Aaron, it's stopping the plague, even of those that were trying to antagonize him completely unwarranted. So that's the final message. If only we can live up to these standards, but we can, little by little. It means the next time you feel yourself holding onto a grudge, let it go. The next time you find yourself looking negatively at a person who you think is trying to undermine you, let it go and embrace them. Show them love, not hate. And who knows, maybe you'll turn them around. And if not, even if you don't turn them around, at least you're practicing what you need to do, which is love your fellow. And to feel compassion for those that need to be felt compassion. By the way, it doesn't mean that you should allow someone to victimize you. That's not at all what I'm saying, and please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that if someone's harming you, let them go ahead and harm you. No, don't let them harm you. Moses puts an end to Korach and to Korach's attempted coup. But if they're not harming you, they're just making a lot of noise, okay. So then you can feel compassion. All right, hope that makes sense. And let's live up to these standards. 7:30 tonight, Torah studies. We'll look at the quick nature of the Kohen, which is related to a story from tomorrow's Torah reading about almond blossoms, but we'll get into that tonight and tomorrow. 7:30 p.m. tomorrow, same bad time, same bad channel. 12 o'clock noon, Daily Power Parsha. Last night, we had our first session of Life After Life. It was, I think, pretty incredible. So those of you that were there, it was great to have you there. Those of you that are still going to join, looking forward to it. All right. See you all. Take care. Have a great day.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye, guys. Take care.